championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys are listening to the Hornscat Channel. It's the Hornscat Channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and everywhere you guys can find a podcast. Today we're going to be going over the spring practices. They've been going on for a week now. They're on spring break, but we'll tell you what has stood out so far, what concerns we have, what makes us optimistic, and give you a big prediction going forward. To also talk about the 9.5 under-over that Vegas gave Texas last week. Where do we stand on that? Where do we think the losses come from? Where do we think the wins come from? And what should you expect out of Texas going next year? Then get into a little bit of recruiting. Mookie Cooper's decommitted since we last talked to y'all, so we'll give you a little bit of update on that. Along with Kelly Ringo, who spent an entire 7 days in Texas, and a bunch of other guys who came and visited while he was here. Then give you our thoughts on baseball as they knock off Texas Tech at a 2-1 series record. But they also lost to Stanford, 1-3. So who is this Texas baseball team and what can we expect from them going forward? So Joe, it's been quite a hectic ride, man. I mean, last week I was sick. You can already hear it in my voice. And you were just freaking all over the place.
Yeah, when basketball's doing, or not well, I don't know where I was going with that. When basketball's winding down, football is starting its spring practices again, and baseball's in the middle of their season, it gets pretty busy. So I'm glad I can cross the NIT off my list. I don't think that's going to make the cut for this week, even without much spring football.
I don't think it's going to make the cut for many people. I think the apathy shown towards basketball from this Texas fan base is just... I've seen people trying to make a clear sign to CDC that they are unhappy with what's going on there.
Yeah, and the NIT is definitely not anything that would make them any happier. So
nope. Would you be happy if Texas won the NIT? Well, what would your thoughts be on that one?
I'd wonder how they got there. It'd be whether, you know, what team was the one that won the NIT? Was it one led by Ossetowski and Roach basically the whole way? Or was it one that relied a lot on the people who actually be on this team next year? Was it a lot of Hepa and Ramey and maybe some Febris? Like that's what I would want to know first. Because if it was the former, the senior laden leadership getting them, willing them to the Garden, it'd be kind of like, well, where was this, you know, at the end of the season when you could have done it in the tournament? But
right,
whatever. If Shaka just uses this to go full on, you know, let's see what we have for next year, I think it'd make it a little bit more intriguing as far as NIT games go, but it's probably not going to get me out there.
Yeah, I think I'll have a nice seat on the couch and watch the games from the comfort of my house instead of surrounded by a good maybe 1,000 other Longhorn fans in the friendly confines of FEC. But I don't think people want to listen to basketball. You can wait till, I think, Thursday when we give you the rundown of what happens against South Dakota State and Texas and the NIT, where you can hear Bitter White Guy go ahead and drone on about that. But we'll go ahead and drone on about some spring practice here as Texas has started up. We gave y'all some good previews leading up to it last week. Again, I got sick. Joe's busy. Couldn't work it out. But there's been a lot going on. So, Joe, from the spring practice we've seen, and from what you've heard coming out of Texas so far, what so far has stood out to you about this team early on?
I think one quick point before I get into the one I wanted to make was that, you know, you hear the coaches emphasize so much, oh, they know how to practice now, they know our system. And although I don't think that's a huge deal, I know a lot of people want to give culture too much credit. It is probably nice that they can just practice and work on that instead of having to relearn the ways of another coach in how they operate. So I guess that's one short thing to note. But what has really stood out to me is the fact that you notice that Devin Duvernay and John Burt and Lil Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson aren't practicing right now, all for various reasons, injury, NFL draft, you know, a bunch of different stuff. So with that in mind, that means
pubic bone injury.
Yeah.
You know, draw your jokes from that where you may, right?
Yeah. And anyway, I can't even think of a joke to make there because
it writes itself. It writes itself.
Exactly. So with that in mind, you've got guys like Malcolm Epps and Josh Moore and Brew McCoy and Brennan Eagles playing, you know, getting some first string snaps with the wide receivers. And that's probably not something that if this was, you know, that week one of the season or fall camp that you would want to see. But at this point, you know that Devin Duvernay is fast and probably needs to, of the guys missing out on spring ball, he's the one that needs to build a little bit better rapport with Sam Ehlinger. But Colin Johnson's got a good connection. John Burt, you know what he offers as a wide receiver. So now you're getting the opportunity to see guys like Malcolm Epps, like a lot more Alvante Woodard, a lot more Brew McCoy, get first string snaps and maybe get some guys who wouldn't normally get second string snaps those snaps. You know, like I mentioned, the guys like Woodard, the guys like Eagles, even walk-ons getting some snaps at wide receiver probably within the first two teams. So Tom Herman said maybe there are too many reps to go around for that group right now, and but it's very nice to know that your starting quarterback is able to work with basically the whole wide receiver core in the spring. You know, although that's missing time with your frontline guys, it helps because you have a little bit better connection with those frontline guys.
Right. And guys like Josh Moore coming back. I mean, Josh Moore looks legit. He looks like he didn't miss a step from last year. He's the same guy who made the diving catch against USC that was ridiculous. So I'm excited about him. He looks like Reggie Hemphill Maps 2.0 minus the, well, I won't get into it. So there's him. And then there's also Brew McCoy out there as well, who looks legit. His stance and how he runs and everything is a little different than what everybody else is. It looks more stiff, but it works. Mm-hmm. It works for him. It's a little, I would say it's unorthodox, but I've seen other guys do it. So I do like what you're seeing out of Brew McCoy, and it makes it seem that, hey, you know, this year is going to be good when you have Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, all the guys you said, right? I mean, that starting core of wide receivers, I'll throw that up against anybody in the nation. But your backups going the next year, when you lose Duvernay, when you lose Burt, when you lose Colin Johnson, I mean, that's like, what, three huge hits right there. But next year, you have Brennan Eagles, you have Malcolm Epps, and you have Brew McCoy, you'll have Jake Smith, you'll have Josh Moore, all these guys, right? You're talking about the depth. It's palpable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fact that they're getting actual practice time instead of second and third string and scout team, you know, there's not enough guys for scout team in the spring, but that's where they would go eventually. That's big. That's the luxury that not a lot of teams are able to offer at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm waiting for a guy like Malcolm Epps to just develop into a wide receiver, and I feel like more than just a deep threat, he needs to develop into a receiver, and that's what you get out of getting reps like that in practice. And same with Brennan Eagles. What he needs is to get comfortable with his body. And how do you do that? Getting reps.
Right, exactly. And one of the things is, you know, if you had to make a comparison for Epps, especially at wide receiver, is there anybody that comes to mind for you? Because I was thinking...
Colin Johnson?
Well, I know this is going to sound strange because he's obviously nowhere near as proven and hasn't done anywhere near the same thing, but at least stylistically, I feel like you could use them kind of like Gronk and Jimmy Graham. Like,
oh yeah, okay, like, yeah, big guy, yeah.
who you know says he's a receiver, even though everything points to him being a tight end, and you know plays that, you know, 6'7" jump ball / out body corners and defenders role. So maybe he can fit into that over the course of the year and get that going for Texas. But I'm not saying he's
Gronk's
Gronk.
A little bigger, but
I'm
yeah,
not
I get
saying
you.
He's Gronk or Jimmy Graham, but I feel like he could play in that style.
Yeah, no, I get you. He's definitely a guy, you're right, who will outbody a guy, a cornerback, or you know, whoever's going up against him. He just has that basketball type of, I'm going to go up and get that rebound over you sort of feel to him.
And then I guess my other observation from practice is Jared Wiley looks like a, you know, a truly
full-grown man.
Yeah, exactly.
He grew up into his body.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think one thing that some people missed as he was enrolling early was that although he played quarterback in his senior season, he did play some tight end in his junior season. So it's not like this is a completely foreign concept to him that he's had to learn. I remember going watching his spring game about a year ago. He was always – he's just a big, big guy. Like, he's the 6'6", 245. I believe that completely, considering he was 6'6", 220 about a year ago. I know Tom Herman basically wants a 6'4 fullback to play tight end for him, and that's tough to get some kids to want to play. But he found a perfect fit in Jared Wiley, and you know, he's already looking. It might be a result of the limited depth right now, but he's already getting looks with the second string, and sounds like he's already adjusted pretty well to the game so far. So maybe he's not a guy that you see get a ton of work, especially with Cade Brewer still here and getting up, you know, probably going to be the guy at least at the end of spring in that first string. But Jared Wiley, another piece of evidence as to why enrolling early can really be beneficial.
Right. And that kind of leads into mine. It's just every one of the freshmen that's come in so far looks legit. Even the guys who are hurt, like DeGabriel Floyd, who I believe has a herniated disc, he is still out there, and he looks like he belongs with the other guys his size. And guys like Brew McCoy and Jordan Whittington, those guys look like they put on the weight. They look like they're college ready. Maybe Brew McCoy and Jordan Whittington could put on a few more pounds, but still, they look like they've been there.
Right. Those guys seem, I mean, just based off how athletic they were in high school, those guys seem like they would be the ready most – they would be the guys who would translate quickest into the college game just because of what they had and the position they play. A little bit of it is get ball in hand and go, whereas mm-hmm. some of the other early enrollees like Floyd, like Marcus Tillman, like Peter Pudgy, not only did they have a little bit of physical development to do, but game development to do, even for a guy who seems to get it like DeGabriel Floyd does. But yeah, they've looked like they've belonged so far, and some are making small moves up the depth chart, but I don't think anybody has skyrocketed, and I don't think that's, I think that's to be expected at this point.
You're right. It's the wide receiver and the running back position. We've seen over and over and over again, those are the two easiest positions to get early playing time and be super effective early on. We saw it last year with Keontae Ingram. We saw it the year before with Danny Young and Toniel Carter coming in and being effective as freshmen. We see, you don't have to be the best to be effective early on. And wide receiver, we haven't really been able to see that because we've had a bunch of guys who are really good, but it's possible. It's one of the easier positions to come in and be very good. So I agree with you. I think those freshmen coming in, they look the part because it's easier to look the part of that position. Yeah, I'm not talking about Pudgy or Tyler or DeGabriel or even Caleb Johnson, but the guys still look like they belong. Jared Wiley, those guys all look like they belong on this team right now. So let's go ahead and get to the guys who concern us. What are the positions or guys who concern us right now? There's guys who stand out, but there's positions right now. It has to be the cornerback position, right? That's the most concerning on this team.
Yeah, 100%, especially when even before Anthony Cook had at least from what Tom Herman said, a twinge in his hamstring, that was still my biggest concern because, at least last year, you knew what you could throw Chris Boyd on the other team's best wide receiver.
You knew where your floor was.
Right, and you knew that he'd match up well against them, at least compared to everybody else on the roster. Now, you're not exactly sure who that guy is. You think it's Anthony Cook, but you don't know what Anthony Cook can do over and over, consistently. He got a great amount of playing time as a freshman of the freshman DBs, at least at corner, probably between Jamison Green and him, got the most time actually playing on the field at corner. But now he's got this injury, and he's also sitting out the first half of Louisiana Tech because of targeting. So the game plan kind of calls for having these lockdown corners who can survive on their own, so safeties can help in the middle. And if that's not the case, then that changes a lot of what the defense is able to do without you know, that faith on the outside. So I think there's obviously great options and talented options here, several of which have received playing time at corner. But you know, it's not the same thing, kind of like the offensive line argument. Like, oh, there's guys who've, you know, I know you're replacing three starters, but there's guys who have played here. They haven't played as much as those offensive linemen have. When they did, it didn't look fantastic, and there's just open snaps here that you don't know what you're replacing your seniors with.
Right. And I kind of talked about this last year when we were ending off the year of Chris Boyd, and you know, for all the crap he got, right, we knew what we were getting there, and that's what you've been saying. We knew what we got out of Chris Boyd. We knew what we had at Devontae Davis. Devontae Davis, honestly, underappreciated. Now we're coming to these guys, no idea what we're getting. No idea. And while we're getting some good reports out of practice, we don't know, you know, really, we can't see it. We don't know if it's actually passing the eye test or if we're just getting lip service here. So guys like Kobe Boyce, yeah, they might be the best practice guys ever. And, you know, we see these highlight videos of DBU and Kobe Boyce has two picks. But can that translate to the field, right? We haven't seen that yet. That's what we need to see. And that's kind of the biggest question mark when you have guys in the Big 12 who they're going to be going up against some, you know, some of the best wide receivers in the country. Some of the best. I mean, Oklahoma has an incredible wide receiver core. Texas Tech always does. Baylor's going to have a good one this year. Iowa State's still going to have a good wide receiver core. I mean, there's going to be players out there. It's going to be difficult to cover, and you don't really know what you have in your cornerback position. Same thing goes for that, for those linebackers. The linebackers are a huge question mark for me as well, because you don't know what you're getting out of McCullough, because you've never seen it happen. Ayodele Adeoye, if he was decent enough, you would have seen him play last year, because the linebacking play was not great last year either. And then you got DeGabriel Floyd, who's hurt. You got Caleb Johnson, who's hurt. Marcus Tillman is not going to be ready this year. There's big question marks there. And for a team that really relies on good position play up the middle, that's a question mark, and that's a huge question mark coming in the next year.
Right. Ideally, Rover is your best linebacker, and there's questions as to who that is. I mean, I don't know how to explain it a ton more than that. That's, you know, is that Jeff McCulloch, even though he's never really played there? Is it a true freshman? Is it a JUCO transfer? That question is yet to be determined. And for the playmaking position on the defense, and one that's so tactically important, at least with the pass rush and how he operates, that's something that you really would like to know a little bit better, or have a little bit better idea of before you get into fall ball. So
right.
These are extremely important practices to figure out who your best linebacker is, and you know, maybe to see if that's what you with your available roster spots, if you want to use a scholarship on a grad transfer there, if that's even something that can persist. But I mean, I think that's also, I don't know how likely that is, considering you got a junior college linebacker and a linebacker you also consider very ready to play immediately. I don't think that's very highly likely. So you better develop these guys here that you've got now, or else you're going to have this question before you get to, you know, these Big 12 offenses.
Right. And to kind of add on to your point, and to have half of the guys who you're trying to decide for that position out right now, with Caleb Johnson and DeGabriel Floyd out, that's a big concern, because it's a huge question mark right now, and to not be able to really give it an answer in the spring is going to cause concern going down the line. Another big question mark is that right side of the offensive line. I don't think it's a really big concern, but it's still a concern with guys like Denzel Okafor right now being your right tackle. And if he's your best right tackle, and there's still things coming out about him having trouble with, you know, getting his feet, or if you throw too many blitzes at him, then that right side of that offensive line might be a bit of a question mark. But I'll tell you why I don't think it's that big of an issue going down the line in the next part, but I think there's just enough depth there to make that non-issue.
Yeah, they're going to give Denzel Okafor every chance he needs at tackle. I think they believe that's what he's best at, and his skill set translates best too. So they're going to give him every chance. But there are guys like Christian Jones who are on his tail pretty hard. And, you know, maybe and Derek Kerstetter, you know, he could be also be an option on that right tackle spot. So, yeah, it's understandably a question of depth. But I also have been saying, or at least of how good can Okafor be and how good can your line be with him at tackle. But the drum I've been pounding, you've heard me say this a ton, is you're replacing three starters with guys who have a lot of, with at least who have snaps under their belt, and like with the Derek Kerstetters and with the Denzel Okafors on your team. And you're likely, you know, that other spot you're likely replacing with your two-time all conference grad transfer. So definitely something to monitor. I don't think it's, for me, it's not a concern. I understand why it's a concern for you, especially since it's, you know, Denzel Okafor struggled playing tackle, and Derek Kerstetter, all we've seen of him is good snaps but limited action as a freshman. So whoever's going to win that right tackle spot will determine who ends up at right guard. And they're giving Okafor every chance because they think his skill set matches there better than anybody else.
Right, and for me, to kind of put this in perspective, the concerns for me are the question marks. If you don't know, then I'm not sure. And if I can't say, hey, there's a high ceiling here or a high floor, then I'm going to be questioning it and kind of be concerned about it a little bit. And that kind of goes for the running back position as well, because Jordan Whittington, while the coaches, from what we hear, is it's all good. I mean, they're excited about his speed on the outside. Can he turn that into speed to the inside? Can he duck his shoulders? Can he get low through the tackles with pads on? Right, because that's what's going to be important in an inside zone first offense. That's what you need. We know Keontae Ingram's your guy, but he's going to need some help carrying the load. Is Jordan Whittington going to be good enough? And can he consistently do well with the inside zone despite him being more of an outside running back type of player?
Right. At least he's got experience running between the tackles. It's just not exactly, you know, Texas style inside zone. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and that's going to be a question going forward. Can he, you know, obviously, can they all stay healthy? But can he make that transition going forward? It's looking optimistic, but it's still a concern going forward because so far it hasn't kind of panned out this early on. So, Joe, what makes you optimistic, though? So, you know, speaking a bit of optimism with Jordan Whittington, but what makes you optimistic?
First thing that makes me optimistic kind of goes back to my original point, is the depth you have at wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
If you, like I mentioned, you know what Colin Johnson, John Burt, Devin Duvernay all offer. But now you're creating guys who could probably get some reputable first string snaps with McCoy, Epps, and with Eagles. I mean, even a guy like Eagles could find himself getting a lot of first string snaps even in the fall if he ends up having a very, very productive spring. I know that's a lofty goal, but I think that's a possibility. So the fact that you're building this depth right now makes me very optimistic. It's going to make it tough. I mean, it's going to make it even more important for guys like Jake Smith and Marcus Washington, whenever they get here, to, you know, really have good camps and practice, because those are guys that I think a lot of fans maybe thought could see a little bit of time early. Jake Smith specifically. But when you're getting these guys a lot of first and second team snaps, it helps them out a lot and probably gives them a little bit of a head start against a high school senior who didn't enroll or early. So that said, I mean, it's going to be tough competition. That's what makes those rooms really good. It's got the makings of it right now to make that a very important room, at least as far as Texas's successes in 2019.
Yeah, and I know I'm going to be the Debbie Downer here, but I wouldn't be surprised if some guys get pushed out because of how deep it actually is. It's going to be difficult to find a spot in this depth chart, especially when those freshmen come in. And I feel like guys are going to be they're going to feel like they're getting pushed out, and they might actually be getting pushed out. So, you know, that's how deep this wide receiver core is. And if those guys do get pushed out, I'm not too concerned about it because of the depth you do have in this position. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, speaking about these wide receivers, it really is helping out that quarterback position, right? And I think, you know, this was your point we wrote down on the paper. But
it's okay.
I think it's one of the biggest things about this team is the fact that they finally have a quarterback that is what they have been missing over the years. You need to have, if you're going to have any sort of, you know, hopes for being a good team, you need to have a quarterback that you can rely on, and they feel like they finally do.
Right, and there's no controversy. There's no offensive change, wholesale offensive change.
Is this the first year we haven't had a controversy in, like...
It's the first time in a while. So this is, you know, it is Sam Ehlinger's job. There will be a competition, as all coaches say, but I fully expect Sam Ehlinger to win it. I think everybody does. And that just makes everything easier. This is just an opportunity for him to... He talked a lot last year about how he improved his mechanics a ton. And thrown to a bunch of different receivers, this is an opportunity for him to continue to do that. And, you know, I know mentioning quarterback is making me optimistic. You've got, I think, you know, just looking at Casey Thompson and Rashawn Johnson, they're well behind Sam Ehlinger. I think if Ehlinger did, something were to happen to him and one of those two had to come in for first string snaps, it'd be quite a bit of a drop-off. But they are showing the athletic traits that, you know, they could run this offense pretty reputably, especially seeing Rashawn Johnson hold on to like 215 pounds. Extremely impressive. So not only the entire quarterback situation at the top with Sam Ehlinger, you know, entering this offense for a third year, having all the confidence in the world like he always does, but knowing you've got these two these two quarterbacks who aren't having to compete with such a large room for practice time, but also you know, leaving that, I think that second spot is still very much up for grabs, and that can only make each of them better. So just the overall quarterback room situation, the guys they have there, and the place the program is at makes me optimistic about that position.
Right, and I'm speaking to Sam Ehlinger and him starting to get more comfortable with his offense, I think this is the time where they're going to say, all right, we're going to, you know, loosen the reins here. We're going to let you become you, and we're going to open up the playbook for you, and we're going to let you become the gunslinger, more the gunslinger that you tried to be your freshman year and that you were as a high school senior, right? We're going to make it so that you're not specifically just running these few plays and you have to throw to these few places. You can, you know, and if you miss, you miss deep. You can try to start fitting balls in if you understand the defense, if you understand what you can do, right? You didn't know what you could do as a freshman. Now you understand what you can do. And if you can do that reputably, then you can become the gunslinger that you were in high school when you understood what you could get away with. So I think they start to loosen the reins here. I wouldn't be surprised to see if Sam Ehlinger try to make more plays during the spring game with his feet, with his arm. That's what I'm expecting to see out of him, and I think that's what you're seeing so far, is him starting to step into that role of a guy who understands this offense and is trying to execute it at another level than he did last year. So, and that kind of will get into my next part, but I do want to get into the thing that I'm optimistic about, which is this defensive line and offensive line depth. And we'll start off with the defensive line. I think the floor is very high for this defensive line. You know, you're missing a big parts in the cornerback position. You're missing big parts of the running back, or the linebacker position. But I think a lot of it will be covered up by the depth you have at defensive line. It's just guy after guy after guy. You have at least three deep in that defensive line room, you know, where you can mix and match these guys and bring them in. So you're never going to be really gassed. You're always going to have guys who are either sort of the same level or better than another guy. You know, they're always pretty much the same level, or you always have, you know, your first team guys who are like Malcolm Roach, who are just crazy good.
Right. They're reputably three deep at a position where there's only one on the field, you know,
right,
for nose tackle.
Exactly. Yeah. So it seems like going forward, this position will be able to open up, you know, if you have some shoddy offense, you know, linebacker play, it'll open it up like a offensive line does for a running back, where a good offensive line can make a bad running back look good. Here, a good defensive line can make these linebackers look better than they are.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm optimistic about with this defensive line, is it will make different parts of this team look a lot better because everything starts up front. Everything. That if you can have a good defensive line and a good offensive line, I think you're set. So, and that goes to the offensive line side of the part. I mean, you have your left side of the line. It's set, right? You have Samuel Cosmi, who is a boss. You have Parker Braun, who is a two-time All-ACC player. And if you put 10 pounds on him, he doesn't have to get the 300 pounds. But if he just 10 more pounds on him, and I think he is going to be great, you know, as long as he can pass block, if he can prove that. And then you have Zach Shackelford, who has looked really good so far through practices. I mean, we got to see some one-on-ones, but he killed it during those one-on-ones. The right side of the offensive line is the big question, right? And that's what I was talking about. But you have so many guys there to fix and play with, and you can just kind of have a rotating combination of those guys. Tope Amade, or is it Ahmad? I don't remember. You have Derek Kerstetter. You have Denzel Okafor. You have Junior Anguilau. You have Reese Moore. You have Rafidi Girmay. You have Christian Jones you can throw in there. You're very deep in that position. Very deep. And Tom Herman's always talked about you need maybe 8 guys to be deep in that position. 8 guys you can throw in there. I think Texas has those 8 guys. I think they might have 9 or 10 guys that they can throw in there. And that's why, you know, while the right side might concern me because they might not have a very high floor, there's a lot that you can do. There's a lot of depth you can throw in there and throw at the problem to try to figure out, okay, we'll figure out how we can, you know, what our best combination is. But in the meantime, none of these guys are going to get gassed.
Yeah, I completely agree that right side, like we mentioned, we dived into why that concerns us, but then, you know, we go back over on the left side and everything's fine, and that's what makes us confident. And you know, this is it. I know everybody wants to get to the point where this program is quote unquote plug and play. I think that only exists at maybe like 2 places, but for you to be able to, you know, not have to rely on a freshman anymore on the offensive line, which is where this program was not very long ago, that's a huge, or a true freshman, that's a huge deal. And so it makes replacing the guys that are missing on that right side a little bit easier when you know that your left side, your blind side is as skilled as it is.
Oh yeah. So I think that kind of ends off our optimism right there. I think we got more optimism, but I think those are the big points we can talk about. But here's the thing, you know, we had such little practice, right? We can't really make too much out of what we've seen, although we have. But Joe, I want you to make a big prediction of what we've seen so far. Like a big hot take prediction.
Okay. So in 2018, Texas had 3 main backs, I guess. They had Sam Ehlinger, they had Keontae Ingram, and they had Trey Watson. In 2019, it looks like it's going to be Sam Ehlinger, Keontae Ingram, Jordan Whittington, you know, there's a few different guys who are in contention for that spot. So last year, Texas had 2,153 yards on the ground, 3.8 yards a carry. And, you know, it came from those 3 main guys. I think Ingram and Watson were both over 700 yards, Watson almost 800, and Sam Ehlinger was at 482, and that's including, you know, I think college takes sack yardage out of your rushing total instead of your passing. So with all that said, you know, after having 2 700-yard rushers and 1 400, almost 500-yard rusher last year, I think Texas has 3 different players with 600 yards rushing, and 2 of them have 800. So I think the 2 main backs this year get 800 yards, and Sam Ehlinger probably also adds 600 yards and might be a little robbed of that 800 total because of any sorts of sacks or loss yardage. But, you know, for a team that ran for 2,100 yards last year, I think they can pass that mark and have a few more guys with these, you know, better personal stat lines, even though the team will have a lot of success running the ball.
That sounds like a pretty, you know, with the question marks of the viability of the running backs, that's a pretty good take. My take would be, And I feel like I kind of explained it with how I feel like Sam Ehlinger is going to have the playbook opened up. Sam Ehlinger will have more interceptions this year, but be better as a quarterback and look better as a quarterback. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So he's gonna try to make it. The reason being, he's gonna try to make more throws, more dangerous throws, but it will result in more touchdowns, more yards. However, you know, with that will come some bonehead trying to fit a ball into a space that's not there.
Yeah, that's always kind of been the mentality, especially when you mention about opening up the gunslinger like you did earlier. That's going to be a net side effect.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So again, better year, more interceptions, which is kind of counterintuitive, but I think it'll play out coming forward. It's hard to visualize right now because you're like, well, I don't want to see him making boneheaded plays he did his freshman year, but imagine Brett Favre. Imagine how, you know, some of his interceptions were boneheaded, but think of the crazy plays he was able to make because of how much of a gunslinger he was. Now imagine that Sam Ehlinger. He doesn't have the arm of Brett Favre, but he does have that sort of capability. Let's go ahead and look forward, though, because Vegas last week put out their over-unders, their wins for different teams for the 2019 season. Texas came in with a 9.5, and I feel like that's actually a pretty good point for Texas.
Yeah,
that's
the perfect over-under.
Oh, it was perfect. I mean, obviously Vegas knows what they're doing, right? But I was trying to figure out, okay, where do I sit on this? And Joe, where do you sit on it?
So I think there's four teams, I think, that pose the biggest threat to Texas on the schedule next year. Mm-hmm. And that's LSU, OU, Oklahoma State, and TCU.
I disagree, but okay.
I think with the turnover at Tech, at West Virginia, I think those two offenses losing their architects is a big loss in the conference. Kansas State's different. Kansas is Kansas. Iowa State will be better, but I still think Texas has an advantage there, and I think the same applies with Baylor. So I think and those two games are on the road too. But I still think, like I said, that the loss pool is LSU, OU, OSU, and TCU. I've long held that Texas is going to beat LSU, so they could lose to the rest of the loss pool, and then also, you know, that'd be a 9-win regular season, but then do they make the Big 12 championship? That's why, like we mentioned...
Does Vegas include that, the Big 12 championships and Sugar Bowls and whatnot?
I think they do.
Okay, well, then that changes my answer, but yeah, go ahead.
So I think over is probably... It's hard. I mean, the Kool-Aid, as I wipe it off my lips, it makes it hard for me not to want to guess over there. Just because I think they beat LSU and make it through that loss pool pretty successfully, but they're going to have to beat. I think they're going to have to beat somebody twice because they're making the Big 12 championship, and that somebody's probably going to be OU. And I think you can make a strong assertion for over. They just have to beat those four teams, in my opinion, for that to happen.
I'm not as optimistic in them beating LSU as you are. I feel like everybody is sort of saying, yeah, Texas is definitely beating LSU because, you know, it's at home. Texas has got Sam Ehlinger. They got their offense back. But I think it's that defense right there that makes the difference. And Texas, we've been talking about, hey, there's so many question marks about this defense, and it'll be Texas' second game with that defense, still probably trying to figure stuff out. And usually, as we've seen with Tom Herman's past two teams, it takes about the third game till Texas really figures out, all right, here's what we're doing with this team and with this defense and blah, blah, blah. Or I guess that'd be Todd Orlando. And on top of that, they have mostly their entire offense coming back next year on top of an insane defense. And they only lost three guys on that defense last year in Ed Alexander, who was crazy good, Greedy Williams, also crazy good, and Devin White, who is really good as well. Now, all those guys are going to the NFL, you know, rightly so, but they still have guys on that team like Grant Delpit, who stuck around, Andres Williams, Devin White.
Ka'LaVon Chaisson.
Ka'LaVon Chaisson. Kerry Vincent Jr. These guys, just a bunch of guys on this defense who are just, it makes it so formidable. And yes, this defense would be going up against a really good offense with Sam Ehlinger and Colin Johnson and Keontae Ingram and a good left side of that offensive line. But still, it's that defense for Texas that gives me questions about the LSU game.
I just don't trust an LSU offense led by Joe Burrow and Steve Ensminger. That's basically like spread Sean Watson. So, I don't know. I just see Texas winning all things equal with the home field advantage. I see Texas eking it out.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I can definitely see both sides of the argument. I feel like LSU is a good team. They're not losing a lot, and they were good last year. I agree. LSU, Oklahoma, TCU are three teams that I would be wary of, and even TCU, because I know they lost Sean Robinson. I know they lost most of their players, but just at TCU is always, always difficult. Always difficult. I mean, even when you think you're going to beat them there, it's Kansas State 2.0, right?
Yeah.
And the team I would disagree with you is not so much Oklahoma State, because they're coming to Texas and they're losing a lot. It would be Iowa State. At Iowa State, it's going to be a night game. It's always difficult at Iowa State. And that's just a game where it's in the pit of your stomach, you're like, oh, I don't know if Texas ekes that one out. Now, that's how I felt last year against Oklahoma State, where I was just the entire week, I was like, in the pit of my stomach, I was like, I don't know if Texas ekes this one out. It's a night game. It's nationally televised. Oklahoma State's going to get up for this. That's how I feel about Iowa State. And with Tom Herman, we've seen there's one of those games out there, you know, or two, where he's just inconsistent. He cannot get his team to play consistently against bad opponents. I feel like Iowa State is that team, and TCU. I feel like they dropped one against LSU or Oklahoma. So I'm going to go for the regular season with the under. I don't know how they do against LSU. I don't know how they do against Oklahoma or TCU. So I'm saying relative, you know, two losses maybe, one and a half, and then you have Iowa State. So it's right at that 9.5, but I'm going to go below it for the regular season. But I think with that being said, they likely make the Big 12 championship, and they likely make a Big Bowl.
Yeah.
So I see it as a very much a replay of last season.
Yeah, I think that's especially with the way the conference is, I think that's very likely.
Right. So let's go ahead and go to looking even farther into the future with recruiting, as Mookie Cooper decommitted. Kind of a blow, especially to me. I love the St. Louis guy. Now he's no longer there. And I loved what the staff was doing going after areas like St. Louis and Phoenix, you know, places that don't really have big schools but actually have a lot of talent. But yeah, you're losing Mookie Cooper, an explosive athlete, but I don't think it's over yet.
No, I don't think so either. I think a lot of people thought that, you know, with all this news about him breaking when he was at Illinois, it just meant, well, he's about to flip to Illinois. It basically just meant he committed too early. I think he's admitted that. And he's from all his interviews, sounds like he's going to keep Texas in his top group, but we'll have to see if he decides to rejoin Texas again. And, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not a trend that happens very often.
I kind of felt that when we talked to him right after he committed, and he was like, I haven't really thought about, visiting other schools. And it felt like, yeah, he really didn't think this one through. And I don't think he did. So could I see Texas, in December, him coming back to Texas? I definitely could see it, but I could also see it not happening. It's just, right. It became a recruitment where you were the leader, and now that he had a taste of it, it was like, nah, now it's going to be a little difficult.
Yeah. It just, happens in the process, gets caught up, gets excited. We Texas fans oftentimes, are critical of kids of getting excited in the moment and committing and, for rushing their decision, and it happened to them. And they felt the effect of it. But yeah, like we mentioned, Texas still in it, will be a factor, especially with the Washingtons from his school. the connections he's got there and just his fit in the offense.
And on the topic of out-of-state guys, and, you know, obviously we talked about Phoenix as another place where Arizona State and Arizona, not so much a match for USC or Texas, and USC is down. So where do you go? You go to Phoenix. Kelee Ringo. Kelee Ringo stays in Texas for 7 days. When did he get in? He got in last Saturday, stayed until Sunday. And he loved every moment of it, man. He is absolutely feeling it. He was, you know, he surprised Tom Herman. He surprised himself. You know, spent his entire spring break there. Absolutely loved it. Felt like part of the team. If Texas was the silent leader beforehand, they're no longer a silent leader.
Right. It's hard to hide being at one place for an entire week and getting to connect with everybody and sit on the head coach's desk in a full uniform like that picture he posted showed.
Is that maybe the best recruiting picture they've taken so far? Because there's the Anthony Cook one, right, where he's standing in front of the parade. There's Rashawn Johnson sitting on the clock. Is that better?
My personal favorite is the one of Deshaun White with Herman making the in-home visit at Deshaun White with the White family dog at their feet with the best look on their face. That's the best picture I've ever seen in recruiting. That the one with Rashawn Johnson in that little background and Tim Beck pointing downfield. I also am a big fan of that one. But yeah, I think this Ringo picture, it's definitely up there. Especially, I mean, he walked into what appeared to be a staff meeting to, you know, surprise everybody. And like you mentioned, surprise Tom Herman with how much he was into this visit. And it's nice that the person you're surprising is a 5-star corner, right. One of the best players in the country in his class.
Right. Kelee Ringo is high on Texas, and I don't think it's a surprise anymore. I don't think it's under wraps any longer. So we'll see how that goes. Texas also had some other big defensive backs on campus, and just some big guys on campus. Chris Thompson Jr. is a guy, one of the probably Texas's biggest safety prospects in this next class. They see him like they saw Caden Stearns for that same position, field side safety. They had Keaton Crawford there, who I think might be one of the most underrated defensive backs in this class. He's a nickel for sure. He would fit in perfectly at Texas. Those two guys on campus at the same time got to take into practice, and it seems like they absolutely enjoy themselves. And also, on top of that, there was Jaquinnon Jackson, the Brockermeyers, Kendrick Blackshire. Jaquinnon Jackson being a quarterback, athlete, can do anything. Kendrick Blackshire, he plays linebacker, but he moves crazy. He's Malcolm Roach 2.0. And then everybody knows who the Brockermeyers are, right? And
yeah, exactly.
They're crazy good.
Little bit of a Duncanville reunion, because I think Reggie Samples was at that open practice. So the fact that they got all those guys, especially a quiet guy, like, or at least quiet with a lot of recruiting reporters, like Jaquinnon Jackson back, just a huge win, because he is, you know, once you have to figure out his position, but once you do, he could be a great player. Chris Thompson, just another great defensive back in the state. Blackshire, man, that Duncanville defense is going to be really good again. So
yeah, they got real lucky getting him. Real lucky. They lucked into him.
Uh-huh.
So a great recruiting weekend for Texas this past weekend. A lot of great news coming out of it. Every one of those guys had a good time. Every one of them got higher on Texas. They all saw what they wanted to see, and that's exactly what you want out of a weekend like that. Another reason it's a good weekend, Texas taking it to Texas Tech. You always, always love to see that in baseball. It's weird to have an important series like that so early on in the conference schedule, but Texas took care of business. And the same thing was so important last year. Texas won the conference last year, and it really, really helped that they took 2 of 3 from Texas Tech. Did it again this year.
Yeah, that 2 of 3 from Tech last year was late in the season and really put Texas at the forefront of the Big 12 title race. When
it also helped that Texas Tech got swept in the last series, But yes, you're right. Yes.
Yeah, and getting a lot of help from Oklahoma State there. But to do that, this was the first and only Big 12 conference series going on. So not only does Texas have one conference series win under the belt, they also, at least until Xavier comes into town in a couple weeks for their off week of Big 12 play, have a little, you know, a couple games in hand on some of the other members of the Big 12. But here's the thing. I know Texas is a really good team. Tech's a really good team. They play different styles. Tech plays in a tiny pitch, in a tiny hitters, not tiny, but in a very hitters friendly park, whereas Texas is the opposite. Texas is good, but they're not number four in the country good like some of the current services have them. I think Baseball America has them at number four.
I think it would be interesting to create a ranking system that is just all of those different ranking systems just together. And that's how you create your ranking system to rank all the teams.
The best is there's an Auburn site that puts together a graphic of the top 25 of all the polls, and there's like seven polls. So there's a lot of fluctuation. But, you know, having that fourth ranking, at least in Baseball America, I think is a little bit too friendly. I don't think the fourth best team in the country gets one hit three separate times. I don't think you can say that you're one of the country's elite when that happens. But it is very, you know, positive that Texas can still find ways to win, or, you know, win series at least, even when they hit a road bump like that against good teams. And, you know, they've beaten all the good teams they faced. They lost a series at Stanford just because Stanford is still a really solid program and probably gonna, you know, aside from Oregon State, a contender for the Pac-12 this year. But they beat LSU, who we're now noting is figuring some things out on their own, and beat Tech. So very positive early season start. The final stretch of difficult games is really this week with two Arkansas games and then going to TCU, which I hope to be at. But they learned that, at least with Tech, that they can limit these big offenses, these big swinging offenses a little bit with their defense. And that hadn't been the case all year. They'd been really bad on defense all year. And now it's become, at least it can be a strength at times in games. So overall, definitely not the fourth best team in the country, in my opinion, but definitely worthy of a top 10 ranking and could be one of the top teams in the country if, you know, if they put all three together. That's been their biggest problem, not being able to do that. But when they do that, they're a really great team.
And for the exact same reasons that Texas wasn't the number six team in the nation in football, I agree with you. Texas baseball is the number four team in the nation. Inconsistency. And it's not that it's bad inconsistency, really. It's this you don't know who your team is on a given weekend. And that's probably the fact that they have played this ridiculously difficult schedule. I mean, a grinder of a schedule. But you just don't know who is your weakness, where's your strength. You don't know any of that. It's one, you know, because against Stanford, a lot of it was fielding issues.
Right.
Against LSU, your bats were a big thing, but your pitch, you know, your defense was an issue again. But this past weekend, your defense was killer. Your bats were and your pitching was great at times. Just like it's inconsistent. So who is this Texas team? Where can we find the consistency, Joe?
I think you can definitely find the consistency in of those three. The most consistent arm will be the arms. I think Bryce Elder as a Friday guy when he's on has been great. When he's off, he's been picked up, which is what you expect. Blair Henley has gotten better and better in each start. Sunday has been fine with Coy Cobb, but I think there could be other options depending on the health of Ty Madden and Cole Quintanilla that could replace him. So I think this team is one that's going to eventually rely on pitching and fielding. I don't know if they can rely on power this year. It hasn't really sparked yet for Zach Zubia. But they can. They've been good singles and doubles hitters, and I think that's a good, solid way to make a living, especially in a ballpark like the Dish, and especially with the athletes they have on this team. There is speed, good enough speed up and down the lineup to be able to move guys and score multiple runs with just singles and doubles. So I think that you know, as an order of consistency, pitching will probably be the most consistent aspect of this team. I think fielding will get there. I really do think the defense will get there because they're breaking in a few freshmen at, you know, at the middle infield and, you know, with catcher. Michael McCann probably wasn't expecting full-time minutes or full-time innings this year. And with DJ Petrinsky's injury, he's being thrust into that role. He'll probably get better.
His own injury.
Yeah, his own injuries.
Wow.
He'll be in that role and get even more comfortable. And Tate Shaw's getting better and better at first each time he goes out there. So I think the defense will start to normal itself out. It's just the bats that have to get going. And, you know, now there's a little bit more of a book on them. But the fact that they, you know, even through their struggles, were able to take two or three from Tech bodes really well for the future of the season.
Yeah, and those issues up the middle, you really can feel the missing, you know, them missing David Hamilton.
Right.
Like, you can see the huge hole that he's left. And I think with David Hamilton, maybe you steal another game from Stanford. And you might steal another game here or there.
Yeah.
You probably don't lose against UTSA. These different games, David Hamilton really helps you out. But, you know, you're dealt the hand you're dealt.
Right. That speed definitely increases your margin for error.
Right. So, going forward, where do you expect this Texas team going? You know, we've seen now them take on LSU, Stanford, Texas Tech, three of the best teams in the nation, at least top 25 teams in the nation. Obviously, they have, you know, still have Arkansas and TCU left. Where do you expect Texas? What is this Texas team? Are they a top 10 team, top 15? Where can we expect Texas to end off?
I think they're, like I said, I think they're definitely a top 10 team at this point, especially with the young arm talent that they have to back in the bullpen. Bullpen was a total question last year. Now it's something you can rely on a lot of younger pitchers for. Yeah, to know that you can get some good innings. I don't think I really have seen anything to change my idea that this is definitely a super regional team. I think it's different to be a top 10 team and to be a super regional team because you've got to have a lot of breaks go your way. You got to win your games. Texas has been very good at doing that at home this year, which is, you know, part of a big reason why I think they can make a super regional, because I think they'll get a regional and then we'll succeed there. At that point, with the teams you're playing, it just becomes a, you know, best of three. Who can win the series? Whatever you did before doesn't matter. But I think that they definitely have the talent and will win the games to get to that top 16 level. And, you know, they could improve. I definitely think that their standing could go up. I definitely think it could go down. But I think the idea that they could be hosting, you know, a chance to go to Omaha again this year is definitely not out of the question. But I would definitely say that they're in the top 16 more assuredly than they're in the top 8.
I'm sure all the Longhorn fans would love having another super regional, as much as they're going to love letting the Hogs hear it from the left field. Like the Texas, who was it who said it? Was it
Hibbler.
Duke Ellis? Hibbler.
Yeah.
Who was talking about it. Yeah. They're going to hear it. They're going to hear it for sure. But on that note, y'all, this has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89 or on InsideTexas.com.
And you guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel right here on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean. Anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.